FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's September 14th, 2017, coming to you from storm-ravaged sunny South Florida. And things are going back to normal here. Got a few crucial traffic lights that don't work. You know that the drivers in Florida are so awful anyway. Just take out something like a traffic light and watch the kabuki dance across an intersection in a couple of major intersecting highways. And you learn why when those lights go out, it's a big, big deal. But somebody whose lights never go out is with us now, Danielle Park, jugglingdynamite.com. Hey, Danielle. Hey, we're getting together a couple days later, but better late than never.
Well, and I'm glad that you made it through no problem, and we're one of the lucky ones, Kerry, and you're back, and you even have power quite quicker than I thought you might, so
yeah,
happy to be back with you.
I was lucky. I was up in Orlando, and Sunday night, the storm hit. By Monday morning, the gusts were down. At 5 o'clock, I got a text from my alarm system telling me that my power was down. Came back to Palm Beach County, went to the house. It was hot as hell because it's 90 degrees out. And without AC, a little gift to man. I mean, I know people bemoan air conditioning, health reasons, all that. Trust me, you can complain about air conditioning as long as you have it. When you don't have it, you're not complaining about how bad it is for your health. And, you know, then it was a day later, day and a half later, they got the juice running. And, you know, I'd say 3/4 of the area now powers back up. There's thousands of utility vehicles from all over the country, even from Canada. I read one of your power grids sent down a couple hundred people to work here, and it was an experience. I was prepared, really well prepared in a lot of ways, but I'm gonna review my plan and try to be better next time. Hey, little things you learn, like, did you know, if you know your power is going to go out, take all of your bottled waters, throw them in the freezer, and let them freeze into solid ice the day before. That will keep your freezer cold for like 3 or 4 days. And you can take plastic bags, Ziploc bags, fill them up with water, throw them in there, and 3/4 of the way you fill them up, and they turn into these ice packs. And that will keep your food cold. And you'll be able to eat. And then I had my propane grill. I had just gotten a new cylinder. I usually keep an extra one, but I haven't done it since I moved. I'm going to do that. So I think it's important that you look back and you review where your plan went right, where it went wrong, so you can hopefully avoid the mistakes should it ever happen again, which is a very likely thing. Hey, I want to talk about an article you wrote for your blog, which I don't know if anyone calls them blogs anymore, but your website called Spend Now, Pay Never Attitudes Cost Us Plenty. And I always used to joke, I'm on the buy now, pay never plan. But of course, like, now I'm debt free and I'm really happy about it. But I wonder sometimes when I see everybody else is having so much fun, Danielle, and look at me.
Well, you know, my point, I took that, that's actually the title, Spend Now, Pay Never, was the title of a Steve Sedgwick from CNBC wrote a commentary on, he's a native of Britain, went back to London recently, and he was just commenting on, you know, the British have been spending their brains out, just like the Canadians and the Australians, all fueled on credit. Their property prices have become obscene. They're paying 70% of their income to try and keep the shelter over the roof, and they're throwing everything else on various lines of credit. You know, he was just saying he's in his 40s, and that age group, which are not, we're not talking 20 somethings here, we're talking 40 somethings. They're all driving around in fancy cars on leases, nothing down, you know, like insanely financially destructive things. But because this reflation trade based on QE and the access to liquidity has gone on so long, it has engendered and encouraged all these bad habits. The buy now, pay never concept is like as if, you know, well, oh, who cares? I'll get rid of this car. I'll trade in this lease before I have to make the balloon payment at the end and all that stuff. But, you know, this is really the mentality that has swept the free world in the past 20 years, and particularly since the 08 meltdown, because everyone was bailed out again. And so, you know, we've really engendered this very self-destructive behavior. And my point is, you know, he's saying, look, everyone's living the life of Riley. No one's got any savings. Everyone's got credit and it doesn't seem to matter. My point is we always pay heavily for this, and we will and are, because as the rubber hits the road, you know, all you're doing is increasing financial stability and social problems, capital deficits roaring everywhere under the surface, whether they're acknowledged or not, you know, deficits and tax and governments and pensions, and saving shortfalls. I mean, everywhere you look, and now we've got rising defaults. So we're already into the delinquency phase of the credit cycle for U.S., whether it's households, whether it's corporations. And next you get the write-off phase, you know, the writing down of bad debts, the losses, job losses. And then in the end, of course, huge deficits and higher taxes. That's where we're headed, because we've got a world of people, whether we're talking about flood insurance that's backed by governments and allows and enables and encourages people to build, you know, extraordinarily expensive homes in areas where common sense would dictate, and if you were self-insuring, you probably wouldn't take the risk. Whether we're talking about that, whether we're talking about health and the inability of people to take responsibility for their own physical success, you know, relying too much on funded healthcare systems and drug companies, or whether we're talking about financially, you know, these are these in essence, in the inception, backstopping programs, whether they be social programs, bailouts of corporations and banks and bad managers, whether it be flood insurance underwritten by governments or mortgage insurance underwritten by governments. Right. At the end of the day, it engenders a total abdication of personal responsibility. And what it leaves is massive debts and deficits everywhere. And we're paying the price, and we're going to continue to do that. Because even if that behavior was stopped now, we've still got this overhang that will plague us now for the next many years, because we've mismanaged everything so much.
I couldn't agree more with you, Danielle. The Dukes of Moral Hazard are out there beating the drums, and the government just ignores it. I mean, what's going to happen here in Houston? What's going to happen in the Keys, in Naples, in the Fort Myers area? Is these houses have been destroyed, and the government's going to write a check and just pay to rebuild it. And they'll say, oh, yeah, we're going to make these things so that a Category 5 hurricane can't knock them down. But then we'll have a Category 6 hurricane. They're still going to be flooded, all right? There is no way to avoid these events when you live on the coast. You live by the water. You know what? The water could just keep coming in and coming, storm surge. And, you know, it's the same thing with whether it's cut rate auto financing, because the auto companies know we're too important to the economy. They'll never let us fail again, right? Because they bailed us out last time. And the banks are, we're too important to the economy. They'll never let us fail. They bailed us out the last time. It's bailout nation. And it's very destructive, and it's very predictable what's going to happen here, Danielle.
Well, there is no such thing as infinite amounts of money. Just like, you know, as you were saying, the experience of losing power and sort of the whole emergency evacuation that you just went through, it sobers you up very quick in the sense of self-reliance. Like, you're like, wow, do I have any food in my house? Do I have a way to generate any power? And, you know, what I would like to take from this, because I know it's been catastrophic. I love St. Martin. I love Key West. I've been there many times in my life, very fortunately. I'm so sad about the enormous suffering that's going on in those places. And absolutely, you have to do humanitarian intervention and try and help. But what I would love to get from this, just like I wanted to get from the last two major financial crises, and to very limited extent have we had success, but whenever we get these catastrophic events, the opportunity is to see what we can do smarter, how we can rebuild with much higher efficiency, and yes, question whether resources should be put back in harm's way. So, you know, for example, should we have gone back to unregulated credit derivatives markets? No, because we're going to pay the price again. You know, should we, you know, in one of the things that's been greatly lacking and in the last 20 years and diminishing over time has been productivity, right? Because we continue to do very wasteful things with capital, for example, doubling down on old technology, massive overinvestment in things like residential homes, which are not very efficient, which cost to run instead of, you know, net zero housing, which we now have the technology. If we wanted to get something tangible and beneficial out of this wipeout experience, we would implement some of the infrastructure changes, which we now have the technology to do. So we would start putting solar arrays and self-storing batteries in communities so that they're not just, you know, left to the whim of the conventional power systems and all that stuff. I mean, and food, and there's so many things we could do, water management, that would be so smart. And if we're going to spend all this money to rebuild infrastructure, now's the opportunity to do this. Now's the time to make some changes. But unfortunately, what you get is this sort of abdication of responsibility. Oh, let's pray for the best instead of let's take charge of the things that we can control and improve here, and consider whether we should stop doing some of the things that are helping to, you know, magnify these risks and problems. And of course, that's a conversation that very few people want to have.
Yeah, least of all our erstwhile government employees or our elected officials. It's like, nope, this is the way it is, and we'll just take it from here. Don't worry about it. But it seldom ever works out well. I mean, what's the upshot of all this, Danielle? I mean, when do we learn the lesson?
Well, I think when you come to the end of your ability to add debt and stir. And, you know, I feel like we have to be getting there. I mean, we are literally on the verge of the most dangerous financial conditions again in the world since 2007.
Yeah.
A decade later, we've magnified the risk. We've increased the leverage. We've reduced the savings. We've got asset bubbles that are now above the all-time peak in some of the measurements than even in 2000. So, you know, I think what we're going to get is another major downturn, and it'll probably be led by financial markets and a financial shock that, as it did in 2008. And then, you know, we've already used up all the line of credit available to central banks. We've already got rates at zero. You know, the yield curve, here's an interesting one. So in Canada, I think we've talked maybe the last time about the fact that, you know, our central bank was increasing rates because he's concerned about, you know, the extreme spending we've done in the housing sector and the construction sector. And we've got, you know, madness. We had a really good quarter and all that. So the central bank hiked this month by 0.25% in the last meeting. So now we're back at 1% as an overnight rate. Like, it's still bizarrely low. It's still, you know, mortgage rates are, you know, 2.5% in this country. It's still incredibly easy to abuse credit here. Yep. And yet our yield curve flattened, Harry. So
that
means the 10 to 2-year bond yield in Canada is now just 0.48 as a spread. So in the US, as an example, your 10 to 2-year is almost twice that. You're at like a 0.83 or so at the moment. So even though the Bank of Canada is saying, wow, things are, we're doing better in Canada because we've overspent on housing and done all this crazy stuff on credit and now have one of the highest household debt ratios anywhere on the planet. Yeah, we've had a couple of strong quarters here while people blew their brains out on credit. But the long bond is saying, you know, you can raise rates in the short end, but we don't agree with your assessment that growth is accelerating here. We think you're so fragile and debt dependent that even these tiny 0.25 hikes that they've tried to do are going to significantly slow the economy further because it's already weak. And so we're getting this flattening yield curve, which has always been a precursor to recessions in the past.
Yeah.
So, you know, no, you can't, it's like hurricanes. You can't say when they're going to hit, but you know when conditions are really ripe and when you've done a lot of dangerous things and left yourself overly exposed and not been defensive. And we have done all that with a vengeance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. For sure. I always go back to that famous quote, the only thing we learn from history is that we don't learn from history. And this time is no different, unfortunately, than any other. And then one article that you had that I felt was very significant. You and I have been talking about it for years. I've been talking about it for years. You have. And that is the impending pension bust, the chronic underfunding of pensions, particularly public pensions in the Western world. And it's the chronic underfunding of all of these benefits, whether it's Medicare, Medicaid in the U.S. and Social Security or whatever your retirement scheme is.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, yep. It's chronic here and the chickens are coming home to roost, aren't they?
Well, the holes keep gapping wider. And if you know, it's like if you only want to, you know, hope for the best and pray, then you might hope that 4 + 4 will equal 25. But the fact of the matter is that it doesn't. And that no matter what they're doing right now, you know, they're tinkering at the edges of these pension plans, which people are counting on for a early and long retirement at a, you know, for funding. Because people are still thinking they should retire before 70 and that they hope to live into their 90s. I mean, these are long retirement plans people are looking at, and right. They've been underfunded dramatically. So, you know, the most profitable companies, for example, have underfunded their pensions and have ratios of something like 65% funded.
Yeah.
That's not by accident. The way they've become the most profitable companies is by short-term focus on how to get reported earnings up at the expense of long-term investment. So they haven't been doing the capital investment. They haven't been putting money away for these plans that everybody's counting on. And they're using these farcical assumed rates of return, 7.5%, 7.25%. They're making 1%, 2%, and 3%. And this is before we get to this next bear market, which inevitably comes. Just like the next hurricane's coming, the next bear market's coming. And
for sure,
we have not prepared in any way. In fact, we are worse now than in 08 because now we've got even larger gaps in the pension plan. And that's, as I say, before we even get into the next downturn. So at some point, you know, the trustees and the managers and the businesses who have been making these allocation decisions, the accountants who have been advising them, everyone is going to be the subject of class action lawsuits because the truth is going to get out. It's already happening. You know, plans are, if they're going to catch up their funding at the way the plans are currently structured, the entire budget of municipalities and states is going to be taken in the next couple of years just to try and fund the promises in the pension plan. So there'll be no other money left for social spending. I mean, yes. Obviously that's not going to happen.
It's already happening in Illinois. The courts there will not let the government cut the pension fund or, you know, revise it without a constitutional amendment, because in the Illinois state constitution, as in most state constitutions in the U.S., it is illegal to cut back on benefits for the participants. So they're just driving that state further into the hole. But in a way, it's good because they're going to have to address it.
The only thing that grabs attention.
Yeah.
Once crisis, they go back to sleep and they think, you know, why are you talking about the risks and the dangers? You're such an alarmist. And then when the thing hits, everybody's running around with their hair on fire. And then they want to know who they can sue. and I'm just saying, guys, you know, we can be a lot smarter about planning this stuff. We do have better systems to lower risk exposure, to meaningfully mitigate some of this damage, you know, but we have to actually open our eyes and take proactive steps.
And take responsibility. Look, what we're talking about, everything you and I are talking about, is it's all about personal responsibility, saying, I'm responsible for this, not the government. Yeah, if the government helps, that's wonderful, but let's count on the fact that they are not going to be there to help. And if that's the case, then I should be behaving as if the government isn't going to bail me out. And that's what everybody in society needs to do now. We need a complete attitudinal shift, Danielle, towards personal responsibility and the assumption, or the recognition, really, that central governments are bankrupt as well as their central banks. The whole thing of bankrupt comes from the banking industry when there used to be in Venice money changers in the square. When one of them promised too much and couldn't deliver, they would break his table, and that became known as bankrupt. That was what the word translated into, I think, in Latin, or maybe it's German. I don't remember. I did the research on it many years ago. So we got a lot of broken tables out there, Danielle. We need recognition and personal responsibility. We all played a part in this, just like those people who are on the buy now, pay never plan, all played a role in where we are today. It's a societal issue that's manifested itself in too big to fail banks, bankers getting wealthier and wealthier. But we allowed it to happen, and they did it to satisfy the needs of society that weren't necessarily needs, they were wants. And until we get over that, it's going to be a real issue.
Yeah, and I always, you know, I wrote that article this week about individuals play a leading role in their own financial hardship, because sadly, after a couple of decades of doing the work that I do, which is advising individuals and their businesses about, you know, what's sustainable financially, what's offensive, keep them out of harm's way. Sadly, they very often will go with the person who's telling them that they don't have to be careful,
right,
that they don't have to prepare, you know, that they can spend their way to prosperity, that they don't have to, you know, work longer, they can just buy these magical products and it solves all their financial problems.
Yeah.
And of course, it's all wrong.
Exactly. It's all wrong. It's got to change. It will change. Because you know, and I know, this is what we talk about every couple of weeks, is that the trend is unsustainable, and a trend in motion stays in motion until it ends. And this one's going to end just like the rest. Anyway, check out Danielle's great work over at jugglingdynamite.com. Must reading. Really thoughtful, well-structured, and very logical and well-reasoned commentary, jugglingdynamite.com. Check out our site, Financial Survival Network. Email us at kl@carrylutz.com. And Danielle, we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.